Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. So Essex have won two of their opening three games in the county championship. Their head coach, Anthony McGrath, will join us to reflect on an excellent start to the campaign and to talk about whether they are the challengers to Surrey this season. Durham's head of female pathway, Rachel Hopkins, joins us to react to the news that they're one of the eight counties awarded Tier 1 status to have a professional women's side from 2025. And Indian cricket writer Chetan Narula discusses the possibility of India facing Pakistan in test matches in England. And we round up the week's other big stories with Jos Buttler hitting another unbeaten century in the IPL and another big Australian name signed to play in Major League Cricket in America. So plenty to come over the next half hour. You're listening to Following On. I mean, let's talk just very briefly about Essex, because obviously we'll be speaking to Mags in part two. But a brilliant start from them, and far be it from me to remind you, because the tapes are out there. But I did pick them.
You did pick them, and you got a good price for them, I think, as well. So times that and put it back into the rand, I think you might be you're in a good place at this moment in time, Manners. Look, Essex were always going to be there or thereabouts. I remember rightly, I said Essex, if they can hang in for the first seven games, they've got a great chance at the back end of the season, because obviously with their bowlers, Simon Harmer, you know, for that September run in, they'd have a great chance. But they started brilliantly. You know, and it's been an all round. In the last week when they won, it was an all round. Nobody got 100. Nobody got 5 for it. It was just an all round good performance by a solid team who, life after Sir Alistair Cook, it seems as though it's going. You know, it's going forward. It's going nicely with Dean Elgar just slotting in there. So. Yeah, I think they were always going to be one of the favourites. They're not a big test-playing county, but the way they've been built over the course of the last 5 or 6 years with the likes of Chris Silverwood and then Anthony McGrath, they seem to have good fundamentals of skill and determination on how to win a cricket match. And, you know, that long may that continue.
I'm very keen to talk to Mags about Shane Snater. I don't think he gets nearly enough airtime or recognition. He's always chipping in runs and wickets. OK, let's talk Durham then. They're off the mark after a slow and very wet start to the season. And for all the talk of Matty Potts, Bryden Carson, Scotty Boland, Boland is now injured. He's going home. He's been replaced by Peter Siddle. Potts and Carson have been outshone by Paul Coughlin.
Yeah, Coughlin did brilliantly, didn't he? He bowled nice. He's a good cricketer, Paul Coughlin. I think his ship sailed, unfortunately, for further honours, higher up the food chain. He went in knots when Durham had a real troubled time when it came financially, and he was part of the sort of mass exodus that left of Stoneman and Borthwick and Jennings and one or two others. It didn't work out for him at knots. He spent 3 years there. He'd hardly played. He had a couple of back injuries. He's a great kid from a lovely family and somebody who it's great to see him do well, because he's an exceptional batter. He bowls a heavy ball. He's good in the field. Good all-round talented sportsman. And so to see him score and, you know, to take wickets like that, along with Ben Wrenn, it just shows that Durham have got the potential international players of the future and current, but You know, when they're either having a rest or, you know, not performing as well as they'd like. And, you know, they've got some very, very good backup bowlers as well. So it's a difficult bowling unit to get into, but Coggers and Ben Rain have done brilliantly over the course of this last week.
Some bowlers with smiles on their faces now they've got a Jukes back in their hand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to be fair, Rob Key, I've not spoke to Keezy. A couple of messages with him exchanged. I think he's got a massive point with the Kookaburra ball. I think right time, right place. I'm not sure I'd want to play all 14 first class matches with it, but I'd play half and half in 5-10 years time. We're going to be at a point, aren't we, where we're going to be sitting, if we're still doing this show, talking about 10 first class matches. And if we are talking about 10 first class matches, I wouldn't have a problem with Kookaburra ball for five and the Duke ball for five in the right time, in the right place, because that for me would be progression towards producing fast bowlers. But there's a lot of smile on a lot of faces at quarter to half past 10 on Friday morning when they were looking at the pitch, seeing the bit of green grass, seeing the sort of moisture in the air, looking at the two umpires thinking that Duke ball in your hand looks far better than the Kookaburra one. So yes, there's a lot of smiles on faces on Friday morning from the bowling fraternity.
The only problem I've got, Harmy, is that it seems to be absorbent. Bowlers keep telling us that the ball goes soft. And there's any moisture around, and you know, there isn't so much in Australia. And if the outfield's damp and the ball's going soft after 15 overs, then it's just not practical. It doesn't matter how skillful you are. If you've got a soft ball in your hand, you're not going to swing it and you're not going to get any movement off that seam or lack of it.
Absolutely. And then it's the size of a football as well. So it doesn't expand. So it doesn't help. But I think if you played five first-class matches, and there's an elephant in this room as well, because, you know, the June, July, August time, if you play five first-class matches with a Kookaburra ball during that period of time, I think you'll see a lot more reverse swing. And then you have a contest, bat and ball. So I think that's the problem. But I don't have a problem with the Kookaburra as such experiment. I just have a problem with the timing of it, the time and the place. For me, Kookaburra's just shown, the Kookaburra ball, you could play white ball cricket in April in England, 25 over, when you have 50 over contests with 25 over ball one end, 25 over ball with the other end, you will get good contests between bat and ball, great one day cricket, bit cold for the members. But we've seen there's runs to be scored. If you can move the Kookaburra experiment from the Red Bull stuff into periods of time where there's not going to be much moisture around, I think you'll get a far more far even contest, especially with reverse swing coming in once the moisture goes out the grounds, the pitches around the playing surface that you're actually 22 yards of playing on gets roughed up, so there's areas for you to throw the ball into, and then for me you get better skill sets for your bowlers rather than just turning up on Friday morning, seeing that Duke ball landing it somewhere straight. And I mean, some of the wickets I've seen this week were terrible. They were terrible. So, but hey, I'm a bowler and I've always said it's a batsman's game.
All right, let's move on to last week's guest. I want to talk to you about Joe Clark. He's the outstanding batsman so far in the championship in the first three rounds. His third 100, an unbeaten double. Knots were in a bit of trouble against Somerset, but an unbroken partnership of 392 with Will Young, the New Zealander. So Clark has now scored 104, 105 and 213 not out to go with 19 naught and 39. He's an outstanding talent, and he was years and years ago. Talking of elephants in the room, Harmy, I mean, we know what a good player is. We know he's been keeping wicket for Knots as well. Years ago now, as a much younger man, he was part of a highly inappropriate WhatsApp group and he was charged with bringing the game into disrepute, found guilty and punished. And it just seems that a lot of people, perhaps influential people, it's a question, have not been able to move on from that and haven't allowed him to move on from it. They can't see past that indiscretion. As I said, he was a very young man. He's not the only one to do a stupid thing. You spoke a lot about this on Following on the County Cricketer, if people want to hear more about it. But do you think that's what's holding him back?
I think it is. Unfortunately for Joe, I think that is there. I think the moving on bit, I don't think you'll ever move on from such a subject, from the what happened. Joe was a young man then, and I got asked this in the selectors interview, and I've been asked, obviously, spoke to George DeBell about it last week, and I think Joe Clark is a, from what I've come to understand, and the person that we've spoke to, man, a couple of times on this show, and people who are close to Joe, he is a lot different to what he was as a 21-year-old. He's 28 now, 29. And I think people do deserve second chances. And I don't think it's a case of moving on. I just think you deserve a second chance in life to be a better person of yourself. And I think, you know, he hasn't really spoken too much about it. So I think that's probably been the best thing for him, just to get on with his job. Now, unfortunately, when he talk about playing cricket for England, he probably will have to speak about it. But the way he's playing and the way he's batting, I wouldn't have a problem picking Joe Clark for England, because I would have done, if I was a selector, I would have done enough due diligence on him and spoke to the boy enough times to work out, you know, the mistake he made at 21 is not the same person at 28, 29. And I think because of that, I think then I would pick him and hopefully try and protect him from people, because there will be no doubt people will have a go, you know, why he's selected for your national team. But I think because people deserve a second chance, I think hopefully Joe can show people what a different person, what a better person a horrendous episode in his life has changed it. So I tell you what, the boy deserves mentioning in, you know, that number 7 batter, wicket keeper, because he's keeping wicket. Not seen him keep wicket a great deal, but when it comes to the batting department, I think he's international class. And let's see what Rob Key, Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes thinks when it comes to the summer.
Okay, I wanted to speak to you about an excellent win for Middlesex at Lord's over Yorkshire, but we've run out of time. We'll have to shoehorn that in somewhere later in the show. But Ryan Higgins, outstanding with wickets and runs. Remind me to squeeze that in later, because I'd love to get your thoughts. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Now then, waiting for us in a motorway service station is Essex head coach Anthony McGrath, who must be celebrating, hopefully, with a Greg's hot dog or sausage roll. I mean, Mags, it's been a fabulous start. I mean, the only team to win, and what a win it was against Notts in the first round. Tremendous stuff. And you've really done a job on Lancashire there. A lot of people were tipping them to be title contenders, but you've given people a firm reminder, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a really good start. I think we'd managed to hit the ground running like every county wants to do. But really, from the first day at Notts, we've played some excellent stuff. So to win the way we did this week was extremely pleasing, given we had a few injury problems going into the game. We got the better of the conditions, I think, with the toss and there was cloud cover around. But still, you've still got to get the ball in the right areas and bat well. And we've done that so far. It's only a start, but a really good start.
Yeah, it was a bonus getting that first, obviously, game and, you know, first win and nobody else playing. So it's always a bonus when that happens. And you feel as though, you know, fits and, you know, the luck's in your favour. And I'm sure it'll change, because it always does. But this week, Mags, that was a great performance, all-round performance. Just mentioned to Manners earlier, it was like nobody got 100, nobody got 5 for, everybody got sort of 50 and 2 or 3 wickets. That must be pleasing as a coach to see, you know, everybody contributing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we always talk about 100 and 5s, don't we? But it is extremely nice when everyone's in good nick, and it was a real team performance this week. You know, it was tricky for batting on occasions, but the partnerships we put together in the lead and the bowlers keep kind of talking about them, but we've got a good all-round attack now, and everyone's putting their hands up. And it is the way we went about it. Didn't expect that yesterday at all. I thought it'd be really hard work, but the way we bowled, particularly the seamers, was outstanding.
So familiar names, obviously, in the attack with Sam Cook, Jamie Porter, Simon Harmer. But there's one cricketer I want to ask you about, and I want to ask you about Dean Elgar as well. I'm fascinated to know how he's fitted in and the influence he's had. But there's one guy who just always seems to contribute, and he gets almost no airtime. I'm sure he's highly appreciated in the changing room, but I don't know that he is so much, you know, in the wider world. That's Shane Snaiter. I mean, he took 7 wickets again in the game, a 3-for and a 4-for. He always seems to score runs. He's a vital part of the furniture, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's vital for our team. Very popular member of the team. But as you say, his performances go under the radar a lot. You know, he's not blessed with a great deal of pace, but he's so skillful. You know, he never really misses his line and length. And when there's a little bit in it, you know, he can find it. And as you say, his contribution at 8 or 9 with a bat, the way he plays as well, he really, you know, attacks the ball in. And he's a jet in the field as well. So, yeah, he's a great man to have around. And he struggled with injuries last year and we really did miss him. But he started well this year. And again, hopefully that can continue.
And Dean Elgar?
He's been sensational. I mean, when we signed him, you know, we had conversations through last summer. And right away, he talked about wanting to come in and it not be 3 years of a holiday, really. He wanted to contribute and... bit between his teeth, and he's obviously started with a fantastic performances, but we also knew, with obviously Simon Harmer knows him well, the character of the man, he's fitted right into our dressing room, and he's been superb. I mean, a lot of people have talked about the replacement of Alistair Cook, which obviously it comes in, and to lose Chef was obviously going to be huge for our team, but I think it's given a kind of a, not a disrespect to Dean, but he's his own player. He's got a wealth of knowledge. He's played so many tests. He's a fantastic player. So to get someone of his calibre at the top of the order, not just the runs, but how he goes about it and helping the young players is, you know, huge for us, really. And as coaches, to work with someone like that is a great experience as well.
Somebody else has come in, Mags. There was a lot of talk before the season started of Essex chances. Essex have always been there or thereabouts when it comes to the First Division. Well, you lost Sir Alistair Cook and you lost Dan Lawrence, but young Cox has come in and he's not only is he at the ground running. When he was at Kent, I was like, could he play for England as a batting wicketkeeper? Because he was a special talent. And I was like, when he goes to Essex, let's see where that goes, because it's in the First Division. Essex are going to be at the top. And he's another one that seems to have filled the void of a big player, because Dan Lawrence is a big player for you, has filled the void of somebody, you know, leaving the dressing room and the team not really hurting the team too much.
Yeah, again, we were pleased to have him. I knew he was a good player, obviously, watching at Kent, but until you see him every day and watch some of his innings, he's an incredible talent. Again, it helps when you start like that, but as you know, the dressing rooms at Chelmsford are side on, so you can actually get quite a lot from batting, and he plays it so late, and he strikes the ball incredibly hard. Obviously, he's played quite a lot of franchise stuff now, but I think what I've been impressed with is just his calmness out in the middle, and he knows how to go through the gears. I mean, the 100 he got against Kent in the second innings, we knew we were going to be up against it with the weather. It was just phenomenal batting, really, and played for the team. And yeah, look, he's only young still, but I believe he can go right to the top, and he's got that professionalism and work ethic as well.
Why has Sam Cook been overlooked by England, Mags? We asked him a couple of weeks ago. He joined us on the show and he said that there was a bit of a problem with two fellas called Broad and Anderson ahead of him. But he's got 200-odd wickets at 19.5. Surely get a go, won't he?
You would hope so. I mean, he's desperate to play. Yeah, I mean, since he came into the team in 2017, he has been, well, his figures and his average and his wickets, and he's got wickets on all different types of surfaces. I know people bang on about pace, but you've still got to get the ball in the right areas. And with a Kookaburra ball, he found stuff that no other bowler on show could get. You know, he's got enough pace. We've seen bowlers in Test cricket with similar pace, you know, get wickets. So he's a smart guy, as you said. You've had him on the podcast, but hopefully he will get a go, because he can't do any more. I mean, he's done it year after year. He literally cannot do any more. He's taking wickets. He does it, as I say, in April, in May, in June, in July, and wherever. You know, he's been on the Lions, and I think he's impressed there. So hopefully, you know, he will get a chance. As you say, it's pretty hard to get in when you've James Anderson and Stuart Broad. But Broad is obviously gone now. So, yeah, look, he's got a good head on his shoulders and he'll continue to do his stuff, and hopefully he will get a chance.
And up to Durham this week, it's another big game. Two, I would say, title contenders. Two teams who will, I think, will be there or thereabouts at the end. Two good bowling attacks. What's the roster looking like? Are you fully fit? Because Durham left a couple of bowlers out last week and I'm sure they'll be back this week. What's Essex looking like this week?
Yeah, we've got a few niggles. Paul Walter missed last game. Obviously, Sam Cook came back in. It's good to have the extra day off. There'll be a couple of late fitness tests on Wednesday. Michael Pepper got a bang on the finger, so we're waiting to find out the extent of that. He didn't keep in the second innings. So it's going to be a test because I was really, really impressed with Durham last year, how they played. I think they've made some really smart signings in the winter. Obviously, it's a shame for them about Boland, but with Peter Siddle coming, we know him really well. And I think that's a smart signing too. So I completely agree. I think Durham are going to be right up there. I think they've got an attack for all conditions again. So it's going to be a challenge. But, you know, we're in good form, as we always do. We respect the opposition. But it'll be a good test for us, as this week we're against Lancs. You know, it's been a fairly tough start to go to Trent Bridge. But I think Durham's one of the probably the hardest places to go. So we'll have to be on it. But I think it's a good challenge. And I think it'll be a fun week. Hopefully the weather's good, if in your part of the world.
I'm in Gran Canaria, so I've got no idea what Durham will be like. But you mentioned that though, Max. And Manners, this is, you know, Keezy, Rob Key used to, you know what Keezy's like. It's a long way when you come outside the M25 for Rob Key. But Keezy used to say about Durham, coming to Durham, you would say during that middle sort of 2000s period, and you played in that time for Yorkshire, Max, but it was like teams would beat anywhere around the M25, London teams would beat coming to Durham, even on the bus. It was like, it's freezing cold. It's miles away. You know, they've got, you know, batters like Chanderpaul and Divinito and Benkenstein. Bowlers at, you know, Harmless and Onions, Plunkett, all that. And then they get to Leeds and go, we're nearly there, and the bus can drive and goes, it's 2.5 hours from here. Teams will beat like that. So is that still a case when it comes to, you know, the travel that you have got? And are Durham starting to get back to where, you know, that team was in the sort of late 2000s, because there was a formidable bowling unit which made them a team that won the championship 2 out of 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been up there for a few years in the championship, but obviously, you know, like I said, with the performances last year, I think they're putting together a really good squad. I mean, the team you played in was incredible, really, with internationals, local guys, and you had a depth of squad. So yeah, it's always a tough place to go. I think we've kind of got a little bit of that mentality down in Essex. Not a lot of people like coming to Essex. They think it's going to turn from ball one and facilities are not the greatest and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, you've got to try and play along to that. So we know what we're getting in for. But I think that the good thing about our guys, you know, there's no excuses. You know, they all want to play. They normally rise to any challenge. It's like the Kookaburra ball in ways. We just got on with it and tried to find a way. So we know it's going to be tough, but you know, I think Durham, as I say, have been really impressive the last couple of years, and they're going to be a force to reckon with going forward. I think not just this year, but the team they're putting together, it looks a really, really good squad.
And final one, Mags, before we let you get back onto the motorway, Harmy and I talk a lot about the haves and the have-nots, and you know, the big test playing counties and the smaller ones. It's real testament to Essex, isn't it, that you've been title contenders and have come so close for a number of years now. Testament to the club, the atmosphere, what is it? Why do you keep producing the goods?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, look, we've got to do things differently to the test grounds because of the finances. We only have 19 professionals, but what we do have is, you know, 15, 16 guys who are all from the local area. Now, it's not just about being from a local area, you've still got to be good enough, but there's, you know, proper human beings and great skill as well and character. So I think that goes a long way, having local guys, they're wanting to do well and play. But I think, you know, the academy run by Barry Higham and the pathway, we just seem to produce in these players, and you need to do that if you're not at the, you know, the big grounds, because it can be difficult to attract players. So the cornerstone of our kind of plan is to keep producing local players. We saw it this week. Noah Thane came in for his debut. You know, we've got young Charlie Allison, who's been on under-19s. So, yeah, we seem to keep finding them, and we need to keep doing that. And that makes healthy competition. And I think that's why we've been consistent over the last few years, because we've managed to have a squad which is full of skill and good character.
Well, keep it going. I tipped you and I put a tenner on as well. I got good odds too. So I'll be watching very closely. Many thanks for your time, Mags.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Essex head coach Anthony McGrath on his way home for a couple of days. And what a start it's been for Essex. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Next up, we'll turn our attention to the huge news that came out of the women's game this week. And we'll speak with Durham's head of female talent pathway, Rachel Hopkins, after they were one of the eight counties to be awarded Tier 1 status from 2025.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, alongside Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. And you can now watch us as well on YouTube if you're not already doing so. Just head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and subscribe. I'm delighted to say, as promised at the top of the show, we are joined now by Durham women's captain Rachel Hopkins to explain to us and to you, the listeners and viewers on YouTube, what amounts to a radical restructuring of the women's game. How does county cricket fit into the women's game and with alongside franchise cricket, Rachel? And I mean, there was obviously there's been a few disgruntled counties who haven't been awarded a tier one status team. Only eight teams have: Durham, Essex, Hampshire, Lancashire, Notts, Surrey, Somerset and Warwickshire. So, yeah, as I said, some upset counties, some very pleased counties. Congratulations to Durham. Tell us more. Tell us more about the restructuring of the game, and thanks for your time.
Pleasure. So we'll go back a little bit. So from 2020, the ECB announced that there would be eight regional cricket hubs, essentially. And what that meant was within those eight regions. So, for example, Northern Diamonds was our region, and that meant that Durham, Yorkshire and Northumberland fed into that professional region. Fast forward 3 years, there was an announcement for Project Darwin. Essentially, what the ECB wanted was the fans and the players to connect more to that county. So from 2025, Durham have been successful in hosting the women's professional team.
Rachel, there were 16 bids for the eight teams. Is eight the right number? And what I mean by the question of, is eight the right number? If you have 16, does it become diluted? Is it eight? We get the best players and then let's develop the women's game from a starting point and move to 10 to 12 to 16 eventually. And have they got it right with eight the right number?
I think so. I think it's a good starting point, Harmony. I think what they've done is from 2027, in fact, two more counties are going to come into the professional setup, which I think is the right time. Again, and they want to keep progressing the game. And we're seeing huge growth in the women's game. We're seeing the talent pools are getting better. They're getting bigger. And, you know, Durham is one of those counties that's seeing that fruition. And, you know, we're really pleased with the progress that we're making. And I think it's the right call from the ECB.
In terms of growth in the women's game, it's forecast that there'll be an 80% increase in the number of professional female players in England and Wales by 2029. So that's 80% up on the number today. Is there a danger that that the women's game will grow too quickly? I mean, you know, that much of an increase costs money. The ECB have announced that there'll be an increase in funding to the tune of 19 million. But the women's game has to obviously be financially sustainable, but grow at the right rate.
Absolutely. And I think that's the key, isn't it, that we are trying to be financially viable for this to work. But I think for me, there's got to be opportunity. There's got to be opportunity to have your best female players on the professional stage. And I think Project Darwin and this restructure will allow that, and it will allow more of our homegrown talent to get opportunity. You know, we're talking about rookies, you know, 17, 18 year old female rookies coming into the game. And I've been playing cricket a long time, and I've been involved in coaching for a long time. And I think it is absolutely the right time for this to come into our space.
It's a no brainer. I think over the course of the last 100 years, this game of cricket that we all love has been about, it's more or less been men only. So I think a short investment, a big investment, will get you double your money back in the long term, especially the way the women's game is growing. But Rachel, what sort of cricket are we likely to see and play for, you know, me and Man are just talking off air there, and we're talking about, you have 2020 cricket, you can have 50 over cricket. I know we had Bumble on a couple of weeks ago, and Bumble wants a restructure of the sort of men's first class cricket, and he wants to see Derby's playing, so he wants to see Yorkshire playing Lancashire. With the women's game having a one-off test match, is it important that you might look at first-class cricket down the line, a four-day game against your local rivals sort of thing, to keep progressing the women's game going? Is that the structure that you know, the women's game is progressing to?
I believe so. And I think, you know, if you look at the ECB, so if we look at women's county cricket over the last few years, they've probably diluted that competition, which hasn't allowed opportunity for our female players to be exposed to that multi-format. And, you know, as counties, as first-class counties, we're tasked to provide the next generation of international cricketers. And for me, the more exposure they get in these multi-formats, so from 2025, it will mirror the men's T20 and the 50-over competition, which is fantastic. But as you say, Homi, I think the more exposure we get for four-day cricket, test cricket, you know, that's only going to stand us in good stead.
The Sir Andrew Strauss High Performance Review in the men's game suggested that the best system would be to have a six-team first division and then a pyramid, like a tier system, a three-tier system. And that's now being proposed for the women's game as well, isn't it? So a broad base to the pyramid, everything building up towards a peak. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, I think what's come out of the ECB is for the first 5 years. So we're now in a tier one system for 5 years, but there won't be any promotion and relegation. So I think there's been a few question marks on that, but obviously, that changes now with the two new teams coming in from 2027, which creates a little bit more competition. I think, you know, the important thing for us is we have 5 years to try and embed ourselves within a tier one structure and create a professional setup. And hopefully, you know, we're going to nurture the talent that we have and feed that through our system for the next 5 years.
You mentioned that two teams will be added in a couple of years' time, Yorkshire and Glamorgan. I know there'll be a few Glammy fans, women players, thinking, well, how can we not have one in Wales? And Yorkshire, of course, they were one of the disgruntled teams, you know, that many people believe that's the heart of cricket globally. So quite controversial that they didn't get teams. Are you aware of what the criteria was? And what did the counties have to do to satisfy the ECB?
We haven't had any feedback yet, but I was lucky enough to be a part of the bid process. So I went down to Lords with Marcus, Tim and David Jackson, which was a surreal, like a Dragon's Den experience, really. But for us, we thought we put a really good bid together about, and, you know, there was lots about the history of Durham and the success that they've had with the men's and the academy structure. And we feel like we're on that right path. And we feel like there's been lots of hard work that's gone into women's and girls cricket through grassroots, through the work that the cricket board has done and now obviously transitioned under the leadership of myself and Marcus North. So I can't talk about what was within Yorkshire's bid and the reasons why they haven't got it. But for me, I think there's got to be more focus on the good things that Durham are doing and the reasons we have got tier one status. And that's something that I want to focus more on than I do Yorkshire not getting the bid.
Yeah, very diplomatic there from Rachel. It was a great answer, to be fair. And that was going to come to me next question is, will you get players from Yorkshire coming up north for the first couple of years? Probably not. But hey, hey-ho. Look, I seen a stat the other week about England players playing in the men's game for the last 15 years, 20 years. And I think there's only Yorkshire. And I think we were equal with either Yorkshire. I think it was Yorkshire. We had done 10, Yorkshire 10, Surrey 11 players. And we were streets ahead of anybody else in the country for producing players from the northeast. So is it now time, like Jeff Cook did in 1992, 1991, 1992, to go to the other places in North Northumberland, to go and get the Steve Harmisons into the sort of County Durham wildness of Paul Collingwoods and Neil Killeen, Zach Yeam, and represented the country, the county brilliantly. Is that the now the job for, you know, the club to go and find, you know, the next kids coming through from Northumberland, from Cumbria, from Durham, to make sure that this is a train that stays on the track?
And, you know, a big part of our bid was, if you look at the opportunity that the North East and beyond, so we're going into Northumberland, we're going into Cumbria, like you say, and we're going into Scotland, that's almost half the country. So we can talk about how big Yorkshire is, but there's also a huge opportunity for us that is almost untouched within the North East and beyond that. So that was a huge part of our bid, and we've got really good working relationships with Northumberland, with Scotland and with Cumbria. So, you know, that's something that we're really excited to tap into.
Finally, Rachel, every time Harmy and I talk about the women's game, we end up shaking our heads and thinking this is the year 2024. Why has it taken so long? And do you actually see parity somewhere down the line, or will it take another 1,000 years?
It's a great question. I think for us, you know, I was lucky enough to play professionally with the Northern Diamonds, and I've got some really close friends that are within, close to getting into that England setup and still within the domestic setup now. I think for us, we want to feel valued. I think as female athletes, as female cricketers, we've sacrificed quite a lot to be in this position now, and there's lots of trailblazers that we can thank for that. For us, I do see a real glimmer of hope and a real positive step moving forward with Project Darwin and with this new tiered system. And as I said, for us, I think if we feel valued, you're only going to get the better players. So I was speaking to Marcus the other day, and I think he's a big pull for players to be involved in Durham cricket, to have such a name within our cricket club and the work that Tim Bostock does. I think we're going to attract some really, really good players and some key personalities within women's cricket. And that's a real positive for us. And our aim is to just keep growing the game.
And Rachel, just finally from me, you know, I think it's great. I really do. Not because it's just Durham. I've mentioned on this show over the last three, me and Manners have been doing this for 3 years. And I talk about my 15-year-old, she's just turned 16-year-old niece. I think she's part of the Northern Diamond Academy. And she loves it. And I mean, it transformed her life when she started playing cricket. And what's a message to, you know, the likes of the young Avers, the 11, 12, 13-year-olds who, like Manners said, cricket for 1,000 years was played by old men. You know, there's a chance for young girls now to come out of school and potentially be a professional cricketer. It's amazing. What's the message to these young girls?
Dream big for me. You know, there's no greater time for me to be involved in women's cricket. And we now have the pinnacle. We have professional women's cricket at the top of our pathway. You could be a rookie at 16, 17, 18 years old. And that's something that wasn't when I was growing up. You either played county cricket, and then if you're good, that you potentially got the opportunity to play for England. You're now in a position where you could come into our pathway under 11s, work really hard and go all the way through and represent Durham cricket. So, yeah, for me, it's grab the opportunity and take it with both hands, really.
Rachel Hopkins, Durham women's captain, what an absolute pleasure to have you on. Keep fighting the good fight. And Harmy and I vow to give more and more of our small programme to the women's game. And we'll be following your progress very keenly. Thank you again.
Much, guys. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with Durham Hall of Famer Steve Harmison. Big story. Been bubbling away since 2007. And that's the bilateral cricket relationship between India and Pakistan. It surfaced again this week with Lords, Edgbaston and the Oval all very quick to put their hands up as volunteers to be hosts if Pakistan and India do resume test cricket relations. I think Chetan Narula, Indian cricket writer and broadcaster, joins us, and a very familiar friend of the show and the station. But Chets, has it resurfaced now following the comments from Rohit Sharma? He was on a rival podcast a few days ago, and he said that he would love to play test cricket against Pakistan. Is that where the story is resurfaced from? Is that what gave it flames?
First of all, thanks for having me again. Yeah, I think India-Pakistan is an evergreen story in cricket circles, and you know, you just need to you just need to fan the smoke a bit, and you'll get flames out of it. In fact, so yeah, he just said that he would love to play against and test himself. I mean, Rohit Sharma is a fierce competitor, so is Virat Kohli. So you ask them, and they will say yes. I mean, you ask any players, any athletes, any cricketers, they'll say yes. I mean, it's a formidable rivalry after all, but the question is not about where it could be hosted. I mean, the penguins in Antarctica would love to host an India-Pakistan contest. Martians would love to host an India-Pakistan contest. It's never. Stories were breaking out about how I was doing the India-Pakistan encounter at the T20 World Cup in 22. And side by side, we were discussing how MCG would love to host an India-Pakistan test. It's never a question of venues. There are so many venues in India, in Pakistan. It's not a question of where it can be hosted. The question is if it can be hosted, if it should be hosted. The Indian government is very, very clear, the current Indian government, because as we speak, we are in the middle of 6 week long general elections. And the anticipation is that the same government is going to come back, but that's a different debate altogether. But yes, this current dispensation has said very clearly that they are not going to have cricketing relationships with Pakistan. And that is the pivotal question and not the venue.
Yeah, it, as you said, 6 weeks of general elections. I think ours is going to have 6 hours, and we'll definitely have a different government. So we'll be fine on that one. But you talk about it's not if, it's not the venue. The players, do they have a sway in this? Because we've seen one of my favourite pictures of the last couple of years in county cricket was to see Rizwan and Gujara just standing side by side having a chat in the middle in whites. That was an amazing picture. And even during ICC events, you know, Virat Kohli and Babar Azam, two of the modern-day great players, just chewing the fat, talking about cricket, not talking about anything else, talking about cricket. Do the players have a sway in anything coming, or is it just simply politically it can never, ever happen?
No, the players don't have a sway in this. I mean, they have an opinion. A lot of fans do. A lot of media personnel do. On both sides of the border, players, again, the same. Everybody in the world has an opinion on this, but it does not matter. Like I said, it's all down to what the Indian government is going to say. The BCCI is going to follow what the Indian government is going to say. We have the son of the Home Minister, the current Home Minister, as the Secretary of the Board. Yeah, it's political. It's all governed politically. And let me be very clear, even the Pakistan government and the PCB don't have a say in it. It's all the Indian government and the BCCI that has a say in it. And it's not going to happen anytime soon.
I think this is probably above your pay grade to answer. It's certainly above my pay grade to ask. But it seems so counterintuitive. I mean, I spent my life talking about how passionate the Indian people or the majority of Indian people are about cricket. And so for the government to make this decree that there will be no cricket relation with Pakistan, to deny any cricketing relationship with any country, it seems counterintuitive. I mean, why aren't the people up in arms? Why aren't you holding small protests and saying, well, actually, we'd like to keep sport out of politics and we would like to play Pakistan at cricket?
Well, again, from what I have gathered, let's be very honest. I mean, whatever you read in the Western media, this has been a very popular Indian government over the last 10 years. They've been voted in twice with great majority. It's a good chance they'll be voted in a third time. But again, we'll see in 6 weeks' time. It's a popular government because it keeps India first. If there is one sporting arena where India exerts its presence, that's the cricketing arena. There's no other sport where India can dominate like this in terms of finances or just flexing your muscles generally, really. So this is just one of the ways where the Indian government says that they can hurt Pakistan, and they are hurting Pakistan. Pakistan cricket economy, or Pakistan economy in general, doesn't stand anywhere in front of India. Whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing, I'm no one to judge, as you said, above my pay grade. But it's a fact that Indian rights, the Indian ICC rights, were sold for $3 billion. $3 billion. And just for the Indian territory. just for the Indian territory, and they fund world cricket. I don't even want to guess how much the Pakistan rights were sold, because they are still up for sale, by the way.
And so we've seen them play in T20 World Cup. We've seen them play in 50 over World Cup. Just, you know, I don't think the ICC have got it in them to do it. But, you know, if they did have it in them, could the ICC turn around and say, well, we want them to play test matches, and if we have to have them playing three test match series at Lord's Edgbaston in the Oval 1 year, and 2 years' time we have three test match series at Adelaide MCG in Sydney, could that possibly be the start of something that India and Pakistan play each other in a Red Bull game?
Look, there are two things to this. If playing bilateral cricket was as significant as playing an ICC tournament, perhaps. That's just one way to look at it. The second way to look at it is that ICC is not really a governing body. It's like a cozy club of all the cricket boards. It's not really a governing body in that sense. So from that aspect, it cannot really dictate India to do something that it doesn't want to do, or something that the Indian government doesn't give approval for. In fact, now we are on this subject, let me be very honest about it. I mean, Pakistan, are they going to host the Champions Trophy in 25?
No.
They're not. And ICC, ICC cannot make the Indian team go to Pakistan. Pakistan can come to World Cup in India or do whatever. India, if they say no, that we're not going to go, they will move the tournament out of Pakistan. And it's not being discussed right now because the T20 World Cup is just on the horizon and you don't want to jeopardize that event. Let that event get over. And I think I mentioned that on our broadcast, India-England, during the Pakistan during that series as well. The Champions Trophy is not going to happen in Pakistan. No chance.
All right, let's move on to the IPL, Chets. Now, Harmony and I can sit here and talk about Sam Curran and Phil Salt and Josh Butler, but we're more interested in your views and indeed how they're being received in India. Sam Curran continues to struggle, doesn't he? Dare I say, disappoint. Phil Salt has been remarkable for Kolkata. And how about that, Josh Butler, his second unbeaten 100. Now, the Royals needed, like, I think I was covering this game, and I was watching it anyway. In fact, from memory, didn't they need something like 43 off the last 15 balls? They basically needed three a ball. You know, and you thought, look, well done, Josh Butler. He clearly wasn't fit. He didn't field in the first innings. He was, you know, you can just imagine sort of Kumar Sangakkara saying, look, Josh, we only need you to bat. You don't even have to field. And so he's come out half fit, opened the batting, made an unbeaten 100, won by two wickets off the final ball. Astonishing stuff. Give us your take on the England players in the IPL.
Well, I'll start with Josh Butler, and I'm going to say something very controversial. With all due respect to Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli, with what they've achieved, and obviously they're fantastic players, but currently I think Josh Butler is the best T20 opener going around. He is, to my mind, and he has been for the last 3 to 4 years. I remember his clutch knocks, and when I say clutch knocks, it's, you know, he can play both types of innings. He can attack, and he can judge the situation and play a longish innings where the first part of his innings is a really slow one, and then he accelerates in the second half of the innings. That's something that Rohit Sharma does as well, and I think any batter who can do that in 2020 cricket and bat throughout the innings is absolutely remarkable, and Josh Butler is one of those batters. He did that in 21 T20 World Cup, I think, against Sri Lanka. He did that in 22 T20 World Cup. I'm forgetting which opponent he did that against, but he did that there as well. And he does this time and again where he bats the first 10, 12 overs. Like, you know, he is not in rhythm and everything. And then he just finishes the game on a high. Yeah, I wasn't surprised. He's been a bit off color last season, but he's coming back to form, which is very ominous with the T20 World Cup around just the corner. But again, like you said, yes, some of the other players are struggling. Sam Curran, he's never been a great fit at Punjab Kings ever since that big price tag. I think he will go back into the players' auction next year. I think his kind of bowling perhaps doesn't suit the conditions here. Probably needs to have a bit more in his bowling in terms of the slower ones, in terms of the off-cutters. It's just too monotonous and too easy to read. That's my opinion. Liam Livingstone, obviously, not having the best of times here. maybe Johnny Bairstow. I think Liam Livingston also isn't fully fit, but Phil Salt, absolutely remarkable. Absolutely. I mean, you have Sunil Narayan at one end, but he's holding his own. With Sunil Narayan, and Kolkata are doing, you know, they're flying at the top of the order. Not many teams are, but Kolkata surely are. And what about that run out yesterday, that one run win? So absolutely remarkable, Phil Salt. So yeah, a couple of these English players having a great time in the IPL. But yeah, hopefully they'll all come together for a good T20 World Cup in a couple months' time. Yes, Steve.
No, I don't know about you, Manners, but in the last few years, I've not really enjoyed watching IPL. We've not talked about it too much. It hasn't really been, it hasn't been something I've sort of raced to the TV to watch. But a bit like the 100 in sort of last English summer, and the IPL this year has been breathtaking. It's been brilliant. It really has. Can you put your finger on why? Though, for me, I was a little bit of a lull, and I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like it. I just didn't think it was very good for the last couple of years. I think this year has been, I mean, Sunrisers have gone 270, 280. I mean, there's been some ridiculously big hitting and big scores. Can you put your finger on why this year has been, I would say, totally different to the previous 3 or 4 years?
Well, one of the reasons for that is the impact player rule, where, you know, if you lose an extra batter, you have that cushion of playing an extra batter. I mean, if you lose your top three cheaply, you can always, if the conditions are good for batting, you can always bring in an extra batter and make up. So the top order plays with a little bit more risk in the first six overs, especially in the power play. So that's a rule that's had a major impact. And, you know, obviously it's really nicely named, the impact player rule. So that has had a major impact in terms of the thinking. Now you're looking at batting lineups that go up till number 8. Royal Challengers Bangalore, they had batting till number 8. They, as it is, don't have any bowlers, and they still play an extra batter thanks to this impact player rule. So it's defined the mindset of many teams. Sunrisers Hyderabad, for example, I mean, I'm just going to name two real extremes here. Sunrisers Hyderabad at the one extreme, where they're just going hammer and tongs because they know they have the bowling on flat pitches to defend 270. It sounds really odd to say this, defending 270 in T20 cricket, because thrice they have scored 270, 260 plus, and they have ended up conceding 200 plus on each occasion. So you need to defend that on such wickets because of this rule. And then you have the other extreme where, like I said, Bengaluru, despite the fact that they have a really poor bowling attack, they are always picking that extra batter because they know they'll be chasing high scores. They know they have to put up high scores. So it's because of this impact player rule. And I think it's T20 cricket. It's a carnival of cricket in India. So you've had flatter wickets. The batters' bats are getting thicker. The boundaries are getting shorter and shorter. So yeah, it's fours and sixes all over the place.
Chetan Narula, it's been brilliant to have you back on, and enjoy the rest of the IPL. We'll chat again soon. Thank you very much for your insights, especially your political ones.
Pleasure.
That was Chetan Narula, long-time friend of Following On. Now then, we've only got a couple of minutes left. I just want to say that Glenn Maxwell was proof this week that timing is everything, both on and off the field. He walked away from the Royal Challengers Bengaluru. Initially, it was supposed to because he needed a break from the game for his mental health. 2 days after that, he said that wasn't the reason at all. In fact, he was just out of form and he thought somebody else would do a better job than him. And a day after that, it was announced that he was signing for Washington Freedom in the Major League Cricket. So the optics weren't good for Glenn Maxwell. Timing as poor off the field as it has been on the field. Stuart Law has been appointed as the new head coach of the USA national team. Harmy, we're on to the final word. I thought this week that we'd leave the final word with that impact player in the IPL, which I think is absolute nonsense. Scores of 280, 270, you know, it's all because of the impact player. The game is a game that should be played between 11 men and women, or men or women. So that was going to be my final word. We'd have a go at the impact player, unless you got a better idea.
Well, you did say, I believe, 30 seconds for Middlesex. So I think Middlesex, who were in complete disarray going into the season. I mean, you're talking about leaving Lords, no money, nothing that's going on. I know Yorkshire's not been in the best of places either, but for Yorkshire to go to the home of cricket with Brook and Root in their team, and for Middlesex to go and win, for me, hats off to Middlesex. That's a final word, because nobody gave them a prayer. Josh DeCary coming in at number eight, got 50. Lewis DePoy, who I think Yorkshire had a massive push to try and get when he left. I think Leicester, did he leave Leicester? And went to Middlesex. For me, my final word, good on Middlesex. No, mate, Rocky Stoneman got 42 in the, when he get it in the second, I feel like the first innings that he got duck in the second innings. But after getting 12 out of 500 last week for two, he was part of a good winning course. So good on Middlesex for that victory.
And Ryan Higgins,
yes, a good friend of ours that we keep touting every single summer, don't we? We talk about Ryan Higgins and Sam Cook and one or two others. Yeah, and the invisible man, Sam Hearn, you know, these players who we love talking about on this show. Ryan Higgins is definitely one of them. Back to Middlesex, and, you know, he dropped out of the First Division, but I think he is a First Division player in Middlesex. A good start of the season.
Yep, 7 wickets in the game and hit the winning runs. You've been listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you have missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the Following On feed, available as always from the TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back at a similar time next week for another busy show. Maybe not as busy as this one. We've packed a lot in today. But for now, this has been another edition of Following On.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.